was 17. I lived with my grandparents in a tucked away, suburban neighborhood and social. I was very social back then, partied a lot, and was out doing something basically every night. Getting home anywhere from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. We'd only lived there for maybe 6 months, and only had one key. The neighborhood was all old white people, and some younger families, all upper middle class, and no one drove into our street, unless they lived there, or knew someone who did. My family was always home, so I never took the sole house key, and the front door and backyard sliding door were always unlocked, slash open, so I could come home anytime at the night, and then lock it behind me. Also, my husky slept outside, and liked to come in and out as he pleased, which is the main reason the slider was always open all night. I'll circle back to why mentioning my dog is important in a bit. Fast forward to a random night, I was out with my friend of mine. No recollection of what we did that night. Probably went to someone's house and did a bunch of coke until 3 a.m. She drives me home, and I don't drive, and drops me off at around 3:45 a.m. I say bye and head inside and lock the door behind me. I go into the kitchen and pop open a cup of noodles and put it in the microwave. About 5 minutes later, I go upstairs to my room. My room was on the second floor, directly above the garage and driveway. Looking out, you see, about 50 yards away, the entrance to my street, which was shaped like the letter P. So anyone who drove into my street, I could clearly see, and they would have to loop around and pass our house to leave via the same road. This is when I looked out my window and saw them. My lights were already on and my curtains already drawn from when I left in a hurry earlier. I walked up to the window and shut the curtains, looked down into my driveway, where between my grandparents' four parked cars, stood a very large man, staring up into my window, dead still with a blank stare. He was Hispanic, late 20s to early 30s, about 6'2" and at least 250 pounds. Red shirt. I immediately dropped to the floor, but there was no way he didn't already see me. As I dropped, I saw another man walking out from my gate, which is not visible from my window, next to the driveway coming out from the inside, towards the other man. I heard some brief speaking from the man who came out from the gate, and I couldn't understand what language it was, but I guess it wasn't English. Oddly, it didn't sound Spanish either. After I dropped to the floor, I crawled to my grandparents' office, which sat directly to my room, and had a window that also faced the driveway. The lights were off in there so I could look out without being seen. The man who I'd seen standing between our cars was still standing there staring and motionless. The other man was looking around and pointing to my house. I nearly vomited. I crawled to my grandparents' room down the hall. I was crawling because the upper level was a loft style, where you can see the whole lower level, and out of the glass front door and windows, you can also see in. I frantically knocked on the door trying to stay quiet, as to not tip off these men because I wanted them to be caught and questioned by police. My grandparents finally woke up and could barely understand me because I was shaking so badly, and my words were just spilling out. My grandpa, being the fearless grumpy old man he is, put on his robe and decided to walk outside and investigate himself. I called the cops and watched from the upstairs window to make sure nothing happened to him. By the time he went outside and stood in the driveway, the men were gone from my sight. A few moments later, a car sped out from our street, lights off and no license plate. He told me once he came back inside that when he went out there, they were parked next to my next door neighbor's car, in her driveway, with their car on but the lights off, and the seats reclined. He said it looked like they were sleeping or pretending to. When they looked over and saw him, they backed out and sped off. The cops took a whopping 30 minutes to show up. Didn't want my descriptions of the men or the car. They said lock the doors if they come back. Call the cops, they drove around my street for a bit and then left. Great. Thanks for the help. My grandma thought they were just on drugs and didn't feel the level of urgency or danger that I felt. My grandpa was also very nonchalant, even though he saw them, which pissed me off and made me feel even more helpless. I slept on the floor of their room from that night on, until about 3 months later. That wasn't the end though. So my husky, her name is Nala. At the time she was about 2, She's small for a husky, about 50 pounds. But to people who aren't super familiar with dogs, she looked pretty threatening. She chose to always sleep outside, which is why we always left the slider to the back open. Literally always. My grandparents would get pissed when I would close it and lock it because she'd piss and shit in the house. Anyways, about a month or so before the night I saw those men, I was in the backyard and I saw Nala chewing on something. She had possession aggression, which certain things like bones, small animals, and things she's stolen. That basically means when you go near her, she's in that state. She growls and flashes her teeth, snarls and lunges. And if you dare to reach your hand out to take what she has, you'll lose that hand. When I walked up to her, she lunged at me. She had a steak, a rotten, moldy, obviously old T-bone steak. Looked like she'd been working on it for a while. I asked my grandparents, but they didn't give it to her. I asked my neighbor if they maybe threw one over the fence. They had no idea what I was talking about. I didn't think about it until it happened four more times. Four separate occasions, I found her with rotten meat, clinging to the bone, T-bone steak. I threw them away each time I found them, so I knew they were new. I asked my neighbors again, thinking maybe they thought I was mad that they were giving my dog food and lying to me. Nothing. Like I said, this was coincidentally happening in weeks leading up to that night I saw those men. The event that made me start to connect the dots between the stakes Nala was finding and these men happened the second time I encountered the men. Fast forward to about 3 months after that initial event. I hadn't slept in my room since, and I went on a trip to Europe to visit some family for a month. Nothing had happened since that night, but the trauma and fear were very real. It made me lose weight. I stayed up all night listening to every noise I heard and analyzing it, peeking out from the window every couple of minutes until 6 a.m. I was a wreck. While out of the country, I came to the terms with everything in my own mind and decided I had to stop living like how I was, in constant fear. What were those men going to do to me if I hadn't seen them? If they wanted to break in and rob us, most of us were gone during the day most days of the week, for at least a few hours. Why wait for everyone to be home? If they were peeping Toms, they could have parked on my street and watched me all night. I would have never known. I think they were going to try to take me, trafficking maybe. I should have mentioned, I am a model, not a known one, and had slash have a decently big social media following. I do a lot of live streaming, I'm very interactive with my followers, and I had been in the spotlight online since I was 13. I got back home from Europe about a week or so later, decided I was going to finally go out again. It was the first day where I really felt okay, and not so afraid. I got used to things being normal again and was excited to move on from the whole thing. That night I went out, I got home earlier, around 1 or 2 a.m., and had a key this time. We started locking the doors after that night. My friend waited for me to go through my gate and get to my door before leaving. As I pulled out my key and walking up to the door, I heard a rustling in the bushes. I thought, I'm being paranoid. It's just gotta be an animal. To help form a better picture, you walk through about a 3-foot-tall swing open gate, adjacent to the driveway, and about 6 steps down the path to the front door, and a small 3-foot gate to the backyard is adjacent to the front door to the left. When I heard the rustling, I instinctively flashed my unlocked phone screen that direction for light to look into the patch of black backyard. At that exact moment, I did that. Someone about 4 feet in front of me, in the backyard, flashed their phone screen as if they were investigating the same way I was. I didn't see the person, just the phone screen, which had a text convo open on it. I noticed that it wasn't an iPhone. I let out a gasp and they whipped around the corner back into the backyard. And I bolted inside the front door. I ran to the back slider and slammed and locked and ran upstairs while calling the police. That entire interaction outside happened in about 10 seconds. The police showed up and did nothing at all, just like before. After talking with them for a while, I went upstairs to my room and peered out of my window as they spoke to my grandparents. As I was scanning the street from the window, I heard a whistling coming from directly below me, the driveway. It was that whistling people do when they're trying to get someone's attention, or when calling your dog to you. as if communicating with his buddy, saying, "Cops are here, let's dip." My theory about the stakes is that the men were stalking me and casing my house for at least a month before I saw them that first night. They must have seen my dog, and not knowing that she doesn't bark or attack strangers, baited her with stakes to gain her trust, so they could get into the backyard without a problem. We moved a couple months later due to something unrelated. I never saw them again. Till this day, I struggle with PTSD. Those events caused me. I've lived in constant fear and paranoia ever since. I can't be alone at night, at all. I think the reason it affected me so much is because they were never caught. No one knows what their end goal was, and the worst part for me, how the F did they find me? Did they follow me home from seeing me somewhere in public one night? Were they some of the gardeners who often mowed our lawn around me as I laid out and tanned? Were they some of the workers that redid our roof for weeks on end, a month or so before any of this happened? Everyone on our street has their roofs redone, one by one, for about a month. And since it was on the top floor, I often woke up to the workers sitting in my window, still adjacent to my bed with my curtains open, literally inches away from me. Did one of the workers tell a friend that there was a hot teenage girl who was always leaving her curtains open? Did they find me through social media? I'll never know, and it kills me. I still hear that fucking whistle every now and then. Honestly, it might be the auditory hallucinations at this point. I don't know. I'll never know who those men were, or what their intentions were. I'll start off by explaining the area, so you can get a good picture of where this encountered. We lived in a small neighborhood. All of the surrounding streets dead ends into a half-circle park. Behind the park are some woods and a railroad track. When we were younger, we all played in the front part of the woods. We never veered off too far in the back. This was our play area for years. Never had an issue or scare. This area was pretty and well lit, wooded area. Anyhow, one day my brother Jimmy, my best friend Sarah, and my brother's best friend Ian were all building a dam in the middle of a small creek that ran through the park, in the woods. The boys decided they were going to head back to Ian's house for some snacks. Sarah and I said that we would stay and finish our camp area. As we're moving rocks around, I get a very odd feeling come over me. A strange feeling that we're being watched. I immediately think it's the boys trying to scare us, and just continued with what we were doing. Sarah and I loaded up some big rocks and head back to the creek, and put them down at the dam. I get that feeling again as I stand up and see something straight in front of me, about 30 feet away. I can't clearly make out what it is yet because it's behind a bush, but I do see that it's a pattern of red and blue. I know it's nothing the boys had on, so at that point, I'm focusing on trying to figure out what it is. As I'm scanning up the bush, I start to realize it's a clown. I shit you not. My heart started pounding immediately. The clown and my eyes locked. He was wearing a blue/red hat with a reverse pattern red-blue jumpsuit. I grabbed Sarah's shirt and immediately pulled her up tight, and she noticed the man right away. He's smiling with a full face smile and makeup and a huge knife. We both say nothing and start running as fast as our legs can take us. He begins to follow, and we can hear twigs snapping and the ground crunching, but we're booking it. We're running through the front of the woods, through the side of the park, and up to the dead-end street. Ian and Jimmy are two houses from the end and see us running and are screaming, "What's going on?" We're running past, we're screaming, "A clown," and they start laughing. We're still running, screaming for our lives, and finally make it to the middle of the street where Sarah's dad, Danny, is now running out the front door because he can hear us screaming. We meet Danny's right side at the beginning of the neighborhood's house, and we're trying to explain what we'd seen, and he says, "Girls, stop it now. This is ridiculous. What are you talking about?" We try to catch our breath. By this time, Jimmy and Ian have caught up to us. We're crying and pointing and telling Danny everything about the clown and the knife. Jimmy and Ian are laughing, and Danny is asking if they played a prank on us. About this time, an old yellow Pinto type of car comes out from the dead end of the park and pulls right next to the sidewalk of the yard we're in. Sure enough, plain as day, It's the fucking clown. No hat this time, but knife in hand and telling us to come here. Danny starts shoving us all towards the house, and he himself is scared and running now. The car drives off down the street and we get inside and Danny calls the police. We had to give statements and the police patrolled the neighborhood and the park for a few weeks. We were never allowed to go to the park again for a few months after that. The city started to clear out the woods and cut down many trees. We made a walking area that you could see through all the way to the train tracks. My friend and I used to talk about this many times growing up, until her death. No one would believe us had they not seen it as well. It was very scary. I think they only got to see him because whoever it was had to go down the dead end street to leave the neighborhood. Either way, this man was not afraid of us, nor the small group of people that gathered from our screaming. He just very bravely stopped right in front of us. As her father tried to comfort us and calm us down, all while flashing his knife, we're all lucky to be alive. Had it just been one of us left in the woods, which sometimes occurred, I don't think there would have been a group of four of us any longer. Sarah's dad stopped drinking that day, and we all have a fear of clowns. This is a convoluted story, so bear with me as I try to convey everything I can recall about what led up to me to the conclusion that my ex-housemate could have potentially been a serial killer, or a serial killer in the making. It was the summer of 2015 when I moved in, and at first appearances my housemate slash landlord Mike was somewhat normal, if not a bit socially awkward and dysfunctional. When I was signing the papers, he was adamant that I should never go into the basement, which I thought was odd, but I really needed a place to stay, and well, people have their little quirks. So I just chalked it up to that at the time. As I got to know Mike and our cohabitation continued, I learned more about the depths of his dysfunction. Firstly, that he used meth. Now, I don't automatically judge people based on vices, but I was surprised at the extent of his use. He was probably the first person I knew who used meth and balanced a full-time job, enjoyed a decent amount of success. The reason this is important to the story is that he would be around the house, drinking and using meth. He would start to run off at the mouth. He would often joke that if I smelled lye coming from the basement, not to think anything of it. I think it was probably the third time he had said this that I asked why he kept saying that, and he said, "I use chemicals to clean up after the bodies," with a widely grin on his face. I tried to chalk that up to a bad sense of humor, but it didn't sit right with me. He was also very particular that I let him know of my coming and going, and my work schedule. I remember him being shocked and uncomfortable one day that I ended up taking off of work because he didn't realize that I was home. I remember that day because there was a lot of clanging, what sounded like muffling shouting coming from the basement. His car was in the driveway and he was not in the main house, or his bedroom. Other days he would play very loud music that bumped through the whole house. Sometimes he would even play NPR talk radio at those volumes. In retrospect, I think he may have been trying to mask sounds. He would make remarks about sex workers saying, "You can do whatever you want. You can choke them or beat them to death and nobody cares." I took exception to this. I told him I thought that it was messed up. But when he would be tweaking, he'd always come back around to alluding to the same kind of violence, talking about how he was a normal white guy who owned a house and had a good career, so the police would never suspect him. At this point, I was starting to think that he had gone too far to simply be making a joke. I was in a weird position, because money was tight at the time and my options were few. I tried to convince myself that even if he messed up, he's probably just engaging in outward phantasm. I knew that he would acquire the services of sex workers occasionally, but again, I did not judge the activity at face value, but started becoming concerned. Then at one point when I was doing laundry, I caught whiffs of decomposition. The house we're in was in southeast Portland. It was relatively new. Having grown up in upstate New York, I knew that animals can be trapped in walls and die. but this was the garage. There was no animal scurry in the walls. I mean, this was strange, and telling me, I considered myself what I do. I decided I would confront him about the smell. I decided to poise the question in a somewhat suggestive way, by expanding on his jokes. I told him that he needs to do a better job cleaning up the bodies because the smell of decomposition from the garage. I will never forget his reaction. His eyes widened and he shot me a sharp glare, somewhat between fear and anger. He stumbled over his words and eventually responded,
What? Really?
I said, yes, really. There was a few seconds of awkwardness before he said, thanks for letting me know, and promptly went to his bedroom and shut the door. A few days after that, he went into the upper crawl space in the garage. While I was again doing laundry, he called for me and was trying to convince me to come up into the crawl space. My body locked up, and it was like my instincts were screaming at me that if I went up there, I would not come back down. I gave some excuse that I can sparsely remember, that I had to be someplace. Packed up my laundry, threw it in my room, and left. He spent a lot of time in the padlock basement without a doorknob. The only way in was through the backyard. I wish I would have gone down there in retrospect, to either confirm or dismiss the suspicions once and for all. In the last couple of months I lived there, I was privy to more graphic comments about women and sex workers, explicit talk of sexual violence, and he was using more and more. He once showed me a video he made. He's a graphic designer and artist as well, which featured heavy bondage themes, interspersed with distorted audio of women screaming, and this strange, leering figure of a plague doctor costume. It was one of those situations where any one of these things alone may be innocuous, but as they accumulated, it became suspicious to me. It was October 2016 that I left there, taking off to a Chetaoktui camp during the anti-pipeline protests with Standing Rock Lakota. A mix of feelings called to action and having nothing to lose, as I wanted to get out of that house in the worst way. My last night there, I did not give notice that I was leaving. He was drinking and tweaking again. Started in on some conversation, loosely describing murder and sexual violence in a tone of somewhat edgy joke. I told him that he would be caught eventually, not even holding back my suspicions anymore. He reiterated that he was the last person police would suspect, and asserted that they wouldn't catch him. He said this in a very serious, concise way, dropping the pretense that he had been using before. I left the next morning. This haunted me for months, and then a year, then a year and a half. I felt as though I hadn't done anything. The guilt was eating away at me, so I called the Portland Crime Stoppers and put in an anonymous tip, describing what I had described here. And when I did, the operator started going back and forth, putting me on hold because the call had piqued his interest of the police sergeant, who was assigned to the call center. So they were asking me detailed questions about his vehicle, his house, and the methods he described, etc. It seemed like they took interest, and I gave them as much information as I could remember, and left it at that, feeling just a little better that I had at least tried to do something about it. Fast forward to recent times, I told my mother about all of this. She became interested in asking about the house, and she ended up pulling it up on Google Maps. She put up the street view, and I noticed that there was a large enclosed trailer in the driveway that wasn't there. I theorized that why it might have been there, but cannot put together a practical reason for it, or why he'd been using it, unless he was moving or using it to haul things to discard. Admittedly, this was pure conjecture, but I couldn't help but wonder. I doubt that I will ever get closure or have my suspicions validated, unless he does finally get caught and arrested, and I read about it. I've grown up poor and been around a low life a lot. I have interacted with many sketchy and unsavory people in my time, but none of them have ever made me feel the impression that Mike made on me. Make of it what you will, but I hope I never meet him again. Hey friends, thanks for checking out today's video. If you haven't yet, please make sure to hit that subscribe button to be notified when I drop a new video or stream. If you guys want some more behind the scenes actions, make sure to follow me on my social medias. Links to these will be provided in the description, including my public Discord. And if you'd like to support me and the channel, please consider becoming a channel member or Patreon, where $1 a month gets you early access to all my videos. With all that being said, I want to thank you again, and remember,
Baba Booey.